It's time to dive into the latest news and updates from the Vegas Golden Knights. This is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
1 hour of hockey talk coming your way. The Vegas Golden Knights on a game day will take on the Utah Mammoth for the second time in 5 days. We'll get you set for it. This is Nighttime at Noon, which is rebroadcast at 4 o'clock in the usual spot of the VGK Insider Show. So we are going to double duty today. Darren Millard in Studio 31, along with the voice of the Henderson Silver Knights and contributor to the Vegas Golden Knights content. Here's Brian McCormick. Give a little nod. We've just been educating the studio audience today, Kevin and company, on the the fame and fortune of Bob and Doug McKenzie. So we're all excited about a run-up to the holidays and into December.
I'm so distracted. I've forgotten everything I was thinking about for this show. But, you know, you're Canadian and older than me. So, of course, Bob and Doug McKenzie is right in your – like, you know that.
So you win a compliment and a shot.
No, a shot, just statistics here.
And I'm hoping the shot was about the age.
I'm saying that, like, my dad bought me the Bob and Doug McKenzie album when I was a kid, which was already old at that point. But that was just, I had a weird sense of humor as a kid, I guess. So I was doing 1980s Second City TV references to all my friends who had no idea what the heck I was talking about. I've been waiting my entire life to talk to someone about this subject who knows what the heck I'm talking
Your
about.
Your whole life, and we've only got 60 minutes.
Yes, this is the entire Rick Moranis work history, and I only want to talk about the part that is obscure enough that no one knows.
Well, the audience, studio audience, will never be the same because they got a full dose of Bob and Doug before we came on.
The Great White North, YouTube rabbit holes. When this show is over, stay with us, but when we're done, Bob and Doug McKenzie the rest of the day.
We are simulcast on all the VGK digital channels, so send us check-ins where you're watching from. If you got questions, you got comments. We just passed the quarter pole on the weekend, so we can dive into a few things. But first and foremost, we want to be one with you. So let us know where you're checking in from through the course of the next 60 minutes. During the course of the last week, beat the Rangers 4-1, got by Utah, and also got a point out of the Anaheim Ducks. It was a four-game week last week, and it's another four-game week this week. Bit of a sign of things to come for the Vegas Golden Knights, which on a good side is they found their game just going into the stretch.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, a lot of hockey in a small window, and the most important thing you can do during that window is just rack up as many points as you can. Even if you're having an off night, find a way to get points, and they've done that. 3-0-3 in their last six. Finding some offense from the back end now, that's a nice infusion to add in. The Braden Bowman story continues as he's being productive night after night. But again, as Bruce Cassidy talked a little bit about after the game, you know, you want to start finding ways to get that extra point in overtime, but just finding ways to keep chipping away, keeping pace in the Pacific by racking up points every night is going to mean something in the long run.
You probably should start with what happened on the weekend in Anaheim and then filter into what is ahead, starting with this game against Utah. Quirky schedule, too. You're in Utah on Thursday. You go to Anaheim Saturday and then back to Utah. It's a lot. Would you rather have that or consecutive games in the same city? And you can look at it from a few different ways. From the home side, and trying to sell tickets to the games. Do the fans want to see back-to-back teams? Yeah. It happens in baseball all the time. Why wouldn't it work in hockey? And then you can look at it from travel and being able to sell the sizzle on back-to-back nights.
Yeah, well, you know, so we play back-to-back nights all the time in the American Hockey League, and there's pros and cons. I mean, from a sales standpoint, I think you always have the ability to – well, let's look. But the Silver Knights did this last weekend against Milwaukee. They played the first game on Friday night. Milwaukee was terrific. They shut the Silver Knights down in the neutral zone. It was almost a night of, I don't want to say frustration. The team wasn't frustrated. But as a fan, you're like, boy, are they going to be able to break through? And then the following game, you're like, okay, well, we saw what they had last night. What's the adjustments you make? And the Silver Knights had 17 shots in the first period. They made the adjustments. So there's something fun about having a two-day narrative to kind of see two coaches go up against each other, what kind of adjustments can be made in real time. I would prefer what we see here. If you got to go back again, it's unusual, but Utah, Anaheim, Utah, that gives you travel days in between. And frankly, if you choose to do so, it gives you a chance to get on the ice a little bit more, because when you play back-to-back against the same team, two straight home games, there's no morning skate that next day. Everyone's resting. Everyone's trying to get ready for the game that night. So you know, especially when you've got for the Golden Knights a couple of injuries that they're trying to filter some guys into the lineup. I think a little bit more rest time in between and options where you can have a morning skate if you want to is beneficial.
Yeah, it adds a little intrigue with the game in the middle elsewhere and then come back. And you can still, because it's so quick, you can still rekindle a lot of what happened. And there was some feistiness in the first go-around on Thursday. So the game on Saturday featured a great start. And it was Anaheim coming back from two goals down in this game to force overtime as opposed to what happened back on November 8th in T-Mobile Arena. The overtime results are becoming a story. 1-6 in overtime, 1-7 in extra time. Is it more of an inconvenience or is it an actual concern, do you think?
I don't think it's a concern when they're... There aren't a pile of regulation losses against it where it's just flat-out lost opportunity. What they're doing is they're winning or they're losing in overtime. So, again, just the benefit of collecting points and losing productively is a good thing. Now, again, right now, looking where they where the standings stack up, you know, they're right there in the mix for, you know, a couple points out of the top spot.
Yeah, so win tonight, they're tied for first.
You want to find a way to win in overtime as the season goes on, which also we can discuss because I think Seattle's lost six in overtime. There's been a lot of overtime, just a ridiculous amount of overtime. And usually it's around this time of year, and less so in recent years. But usually it's around this time of the year where you can kind of look at the standings and they kind of mean something. But right now, in the Pacific, the Pacific has a 4-point difference between first and sixth. Mm-hmm. That's incredibly tight. So the stand, and they're not the only division that looks like that.
Yeah, Vancouver, Calgary, the only two teams on the outside.
Yeah, yeah, that are really licking their wounds.
Scratching,
but everyone else
to get within reach.
Everyone else is winning, and again, you've got a couple of, you know, look at Anaheim, of course, at the top. They're an upstart team. San Jose, I've been watching them a lot at night. They're fun to watch.
There's I think Seattle surprised some people.
It's just not a weak division, and so for that reason, getting points any way you can is a positive. Now, for the Golden Knights, I think one of the things you see as well, like Bruce has talked about puck management in overtimes. Of course, turnovers will hurt you. Not just turnovers that lead directly to scoring chances, but if you lose possession in overtime, you might lose possession for 3 minutes. It really is such a possession game. And I think the Golden Knights have been outshot in overtime across the span of their overtime games this season. They've been outshot 20-10. I think in Seattle, I think they were shorthanded during overtime, and so that factors in as well. But, you know, I think the question becomes really
didn't realize it was that lopsided. The last few have been relatively even when Vegas has outplayed the opposition, the shots ended up being a wash.
So I'm trying to remember. I think Seattle had a power play in overtime when they won. They had 7 shots in overtime, so that kind of skews the numbers too. But all of which is to say, sometimes in overtime, you have the 2-on-1, you don't score, and you never get the puck back again. Yeah. And that might just be an indication for the Golden Knights. If they just get a little bit more finish on their pure scoring chances when they have them, you know, overtime doesn't last 4 minutes. It lasts 20 seconds. So that just shows you how much of a coin flip it can be. The fact that they've lost the amount that they have is probably more of an indication of they've had some bad luck and they've had some rough sequences in their own end that they just haven't been able to survive.
Jeff Sharples is going to join me on the TV side tonight in the pregame show, which comes up at 5:30 on Scripps Sports. And we're going to get into this conversation about how you play overtime, because there's a real fine line there. Mm-hmm. Ryan, it's all your best players that are out there. You want them to be creative because there's so much open ice. But puck management has been an area where if you look at the losses and how the games have ended, it's been as much by Vegas making decisions with the puck. Saturday night's another example where it just a play didn't work out well for them and it ended up in their back then almost immediately.
And the turnover that led to the Gauthier goal on Saturday, I've watched that a handful of times. I think we've all been in that situation where that wasn't a poor decision for Mitch Marner. That was, I think he made 3 decisions at once and just kind of glitched. That's happened.
Am I doing it? I'm not doing it.
It's gone. So.
But where you are in the course of the game and geographically in the zone, you're behind your own net. That's one where you probably want to be a little more conservative in that play.
Sure. And have the option just to carry it.
Mitch Marner makes that play, that backhand sauce, as good as anybody in the league. it's one time that it got him. But where you are in the game and where you are in the state of the rink probably dictates and guides you to a different plan.
Again, that's you don't need to overanalyze that instance when it wasn't what he meant to do in the first place.
Right.
You may have passed up the middle of your own zone trying to go tape to tape, and what were you thinking? That's something you can Monday morning quarterback. That's not the intended play, and it's an unfortunate.
But it's hard to ask them to be conservative. Result. Hey, Jack, Mitch, be conservative out there. We got to get this overtime thing back on track. I'm not sure you can express it that way.
Well, and again, what you want to do is again, it's so much of it. We see two different kinds of overtimes more often than not. You've got the run-and-gun track meet where it's just trading chances, or you have we survey the offensive zone and there's nothing there and we loop 100 feet back out and we'll try it again. And you just try to wait until you get someone just to overcommit a stride and a half to the inside or the outside.
You play them into boredom.
Yeah.
You play them into taking a risk.
Over-pursuit. Yeah. Exactly. And so for the Golden Knights, I mean, most of the overtime games we've seen, they've had a scoring chance. It hasn't gone. And then they just haven't gotten it back again. And that's just the way it works. But, you know, there's so many variables. Sometimes if you have a goaltender who can move the puck, you can have a 3-on-2 chance, a glove save, drops it, forwards it himself. And there's a certain point where you can't be conservative for 5 minutes. At some point, someone gives you an ounce of daylight. You got to make the most of it. You got to try to capitalize on it. And for the Golden Knights, just those haven't gone in.
Interesting when you compare 5-on-5, the traditional style of the play, and then 3-on-3.
Yeah.
Vegas' second fewest regulation losses, 5-on-5. Only Colorado's off to a great start with one is better.
And they lost 5 in overtime, I think.
Yes. And then you get to 3-on-3, and you've got more defeats. So there's a contradiction there that will confuse the non-hockey followers, and I understand that, but it is truly two different ways to analyze the game, our sport.
And there's just so much room. There's so much room combined with so much talent. You can play structurally 5-on-5 and contain, or at least say, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, if he's going to beat me, he's going to beat me from there. And he'll still do it on occasion, but you can at least pick your poisons. Whereas, again, 3-on-3, you're either going to have a rebound or a puck that hops over a stick, and it's an odd man rush, and then we're just in complete discombobulation until someone can get a whistle and calm things down again. Or you're going to have circles and cycles. And at that point, it's almost like backyard football, you know? There's
big fan of that.
Maybe I say, okay, go out here and go right. But once that play breaks down, now it's just get free, get loose. And there's just it only takes a stride and a half to get a good scoring chance. And that's why you just hold your breath and hope that you have the puck last.
I had a buddy, RJ, and he was a stickler. I'll do a post pattern, and I'll meet you at the rose bush in his backyard.
How far away was the rose bush?
Well, 30 feet.
Just airing it out.
You know what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
You're leading him right into that rose
bush.
Oh,
yeah.
And he never figured it out. Never figured out that he'd end up all stuck up with thorns.
Yeah, my brother's the Subaru on the curb. Like, you break.
lots of people checking in with us. We'll get to that as we continue. Also, Bruce Cassidy speaking in Salt Lake City this morning. We'll get you that sound ahead of this game against the Utah Mammoth. But before we go to break, you spoke and the Golden Knights listened. The new VGK Locals menu is now available at the team's home games. Menu features hot dogs, nachos, water, fountain soda, pretzels, and popcorn for just $5.50. Season ticket members also receive an additional 10% off all concessions, including the VGK Locals menu. Check it out. Games Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday at the Fortress. We'll come back with Bruce Cassidy sound as we continue Nighttime at Noon.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
VGK's holiday ticket package has returned for the holiday season and is now available for purchase. The all-new ticket plan includes 3 home games, with the first coming on the 7th when the Golden Knights host the New Jersey Devils. And then it also includes in the package the VGK jersey created for fans celebrating the holidays. Learn more by visiting VegasGoldenKnights.com today. The jersey, the commemorative jersey, is fantastic. It's like a great crossover between a hockey sweater and a holiday sweater. And it's stylish. It's got stuff going on. It's almost as good as what Jeff Sharples modeled for us on the weekend.
We finished our game at Lee's Family Forum. I came down to the office, popped the TV on in time for postgame. And I texted you during, I was like, why is he wearing a license plate on his shoulder? Like, that thing was just massive. And so like that was, what, he was just trying to one-up your lapel pin?
So what happened was on the Thursday night game, he was in studio with Alec Martinez and I, and we all show up with our regular suits, and we've got the BGK pins.
Right? Yeah.
Well, Sharples had this special edition pin that was bigger, shinier, and nicer than the two of us. So we, as we would want to do,
acknowledged it,
mocked him as trying to big time us with his pin. So he shows up on Saturday, and little known to Sharples and his wife Michelle had made up this massive pin that wasn't really a pin but a badge.
Yeah.
And he wore it for the whole night, so we had to keep explaining to people who were joining, like you, throughout the show, why is he wearing that thing? But
he was leaning the whole show.
It looked like I finally figured out, it looked like a Price is Right name tag.
Yes.
You know, it has taken me 2 days to come up with that comparison, but that's what it was. And it kept big, and he wanted to make it bigger and bigger, and we just lost track of time because the game was so good and we were going back and forth. But Alec Martinez, for a three-time Stanley Cup champion, very, very detailed hockey guy. He loved
upset
that.
Upset with the nonsense going
he
on.
He loved that. Like, you don't have to sprinkle the shenanigans too far away from Marty for him to start going over there and Stefan, what can I capitalize on?
Now, before we get back to business, is Jeff on with you tonight?
Jeff is on tonight. Marty is not. Marty will be, we're hoping to get Marty in the rink Wednesday, Friday, or Saturday.
So you made fun of the initial pin, so he came up with the giant armor shoulder pad pin. We're making fun of that now, so now he needs to exceed that. So, Sharps, you got roughly 5 hours to go find a WWE belt VGK thing that you can throw
over
on his
shoulder.
Yeah.
Well, WWE is a good reference because we had a little feistiness in the first go-around between Vegas and Utah on Thursday. A couple of hits that respective teams didn't like. There was a scrap by Keegan Colasar dropped in the gloves, and curious. A lot of times that stuff doesn't spill over. You build it up and it doesn't happen. Then out of nowhere, there's two teams that just for some reason don't like each other. We'll see if that happens tonight. We'll go to Salt Lake City and join Bruce Cassie and then jump off what Bruce has to say about this rematch with Utah.
You guys are playing them twice in 5 days. What are the pros and cons of that?
Less work and pre-scout, that's for sure. They're fresh in our minds, and they'd probably say the same. The good thing is you know more of their tendencies, or they're fresher in your mind. And then the same about us, right? So that's probably a wash. Sometimes coming back in here this quick when you're on the road, you're going to see, a highly motivated team, right? That's just a challenge for us. So whoever ended up in the wrong side is probably going to be, you know, a little more on edge to even the score, so to speak.
How about the physical nature of it? We saw that really ramp up the last time we were here. Keegan had a fight. We saw Reinhardt kind of get involved. What do you expect in terms of any retaliation or carryover in that respect?
Well, I don't know. It was a clean hit on their guy. Those things happen all the time. You've got to find a way. To me, it's not about retaliation. It's about making sure you're physical again. If that happens to us, I'd say, hey, our guy's got to be physical too against them. That's kind of the payback, I guess, for lack of a better term. And so we're going to go approach the game like we would any game that way. If it gets physical, I think it's fine for us. We tend to play better when we get dragged into a little bit. So that'll play itself out.
And offensively, I know it's been not quite the production that they want, the fourth line guys, but they're bringing the physical side of it. Do you think it's only a matter of time until some of those chances start going in?
As long as they're getting them, and that's what we're going to keep working on. I think their ozone possession time needs to improve. They need to hang on to pucks, support each other better so they can create a little separation and get something to the net. So I think Rhino's had some good looks off the wing with some speed, but they're kind of one and done. That's where that line has to work together with their D-core as well, whoever D-pair, sorry, is out there, and create some stuff for high once they do have possession to make sure that they're spacing so they can recover rebounds. That's the challenge for them right now. I think there's been pockets of that. It's been very good, and pockets where just not in their end enough. And that's what happened with lines down, you know, lowering your lineup. I mean, the skill guys sometimes only need one.
2 minutes.
They're probably going to need, you know, two or three. So that's a challenge for them.
21 games officially in the books. So right at that kind of quarter mark of the season, can you give me kind of a state of the team in terms of what's working really well and areas to improve?
Our offensive game's coming around. Kind of the half-court game, I think, has been a lot better the last 10, 11 games. That kind of shows in our even strength. Goals, expected goals, chances, all those things, that's good. Special teams, PK, I think, has been very good. The numbers are starting to come around on that. Power play, a little cyclical. Now it's trending in a good, better direction than it was, say, you know, 2-3 weeks ago. Not where it was at the start of the year, but better. Like our goaltending, I think Akira we've seen more of, been very consistent. Upgrade, probably our rush game. We haven't been as clean with generating chances off the rush for whatever reason. We got to execute a little bit better in those areas. Defensively, slot coverage is good. Puck management, we keep harping on. I think 5-on-5, it's been good. Overtime, it hasn't. Cost us points there. Overtime's a tough thing to work on, Jamie. Like it's one of those ones in practice can get it's more a mindset. The players just have to go out and recognize when they, you know, a little bit firmer in certain situations with the puck, and hopefully that'll correct itself.
Do you sense, Bruce, in the overtime, I don't know if it's lack of confidence, but you know they know the numbers. You haven't had the success you want.
I think it's the total opposite. We're casual in overtime, and that's killed us, to be honest. Not lack of confidence. Maybe a little too much confidence, to be honest with you. Some of the plays we've tried to make, I mean, we've lost four overtimes where we've had the puck, and it's literally in our net 3-4 seconds later. I don't think that's confidence at all. We need to bear down a little more. Minnesota game's a power play goal. That happens, right? The Islander game was a one-on-one that we need to save them.
Bruce Cassidy and his approach to overtime. That he'll find a couple of comments by the Vegas Golden Knights head coach who will take on the Utah Mammoth tonight. Interesting, the last part about overtime and gets to the decision-making more than the athlete and the skill set and what they're able to do. It's how they get there.
Yeah, it's funny. He said, I think we're actually a little too casual. Yeah. And again, that can kind of speak to also, again, management of pucks for sure, but like we said, if you get a good look in overtime, it might be the only good one that you get. And maybe that's something to be spoken to as well of puck retrieval and having those long, sustained windows of pressure that the Golden Knights have faced more than they've been able to generate. But that was interesting for him to mention. But everything else that they're doing right now, 5-on-5, you mentioned the half-court game. He likes the pressure they're putting on. I mean, they're doing a lot of things well, and now it's just a matter of trying to activate more guys to get them going offensively to get some deeper production.
Yeah, you go through the games. Tampa Bay, there was a giveaway that went the other way, ended up in their net 200 feet down the ice. The Anaheim game was some great, strong offensive play. They are able to capitalize off a one board battle in the Vegas Golden Knights zone. The power play for Minnesota. Then there was the shorthanded goal that they allowed that went the other way. More of a fluky play after your goaltender had made a breakaway save right before that and did extend the game. But there are ways to connect it, and I feel like they're not being outplayed in overtime. It's just they're working themselves into adverse situations by not taking care of the puck, which should be correctable with a really talented team.
Yeah, but as Bruce said, though, you know, it's hard to practice.
Yeah.
It's hard to work on something that can be so amorphous at times, but it's a matter of going out, doing it, and valuing the puck.
And if you're going to practice it, then you're going to be looser. You're going to be trying all kinds of things.
Yeah,
because there's no consequences, right?
And how many turnovers are there going to be in 3-on-3 practice?
Yeah, that's a problem. Or goals, and can it's one of those ones where it's and how much time do you put into it? I've seen teams not do anything with it, but then if you're going to play 8 overtime games in your first 21, does that guide, if that's going to be the case this season, does that guide the coaching staff and the players to want to work on it a little bit more?
Well, maybe you have a number for it. I don't. I've just been kind of scanning. It's anecdotal, but I'm just looking. I'm like, boy, there's been a lot of overtime. Mm-hmm. Like league-wide, a lot of overtime. And I think
and a lot of games decided in overtime.
Yes, yeah. There haven't been a lot of shootouts. There's been a lot of overtime. And I think the record for OT losses, I think, is 18, I think. Which is to say, I mean, that's a lot of overtime too. But it doesn't feel like this need of finding better three-on-three results is going to wane as the season goes along. I think it's going to be something that needs to they need to get better results, obviously. But it might just be like any challenge you have, even if it's losing regulation, you need a stopper.
Yeah.
So you're just going to need an overtime where you go out, you win the opening face-off, you control the puck, and you never give it back. And when that day comes, you can dust it off, say, okay, that's more like it, and then you can move on without having it be something in the back of your mind.
Can you diminish the impact of what the 1-6 record is in overtime by saying it's 5 points? If we get a bounce here or there, it's really we're losing 3 points. Are you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think.
Or is it too simple and they should want every single point?
No, I think you can diminish it, or you can
justify, rationalize,
make peace with it.
Yeah.
Make peace with it when you look at without those 5 points. You're 2 points back of Anaheim with a game in hand. Mm-hmm. So it's not we've lost those 5 points and we're 4 points out of a wild card and that's where it is. That's where we lost. You're right. If anything, you could say, hey, if we got a couple of pucks to bounce off an ankle and go in, we're in first place without it. So, again, it's something you want to figure it out just because you want points. But
I think they want to figure it out so they stop talking about it.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think so, too. But it's also a talented team of playmakers. They're going to have better results in overtime as time goes on once they can get something to bounce their way. But I think right now it's not points that you're missing and it's put you behind an eight ball. Mm. If anything, it's, guys, if we had any kind of luck at all, we're playing with house money sitting at the top looking down. That's how I'd approach it.
Brian McCormick, Darren Millard on Nighttime at Noon, hoping for a guest appearance by one of our studio audience members later on, if we can convince somebody to come up. And for those of you who are watching on the stream, send us a note through your social media platform and let us know where you're watching. Allison is in Lubbock, Texas, taking in the game or the show today.
Just going back, you said it's a member of our studio audience. You said that Sharps before looked like he was on The Price is Right. It's not, yeah. Sharps. Sharps is not going to come on down.
Can you imagine Sharples running down?
Storming through the TV monitor.
Right.
He just gets so excited.
In front of us. And he would have that wheel spinning. Like, I'm always amazed how some of the people can spin that wheel.
Mm.
That thing might not stop.
He'd lean on it.
He would go. And Tyler, watching from Ingleside, Ontario. That's about 15 minutes away from Ben Hutton's hometown. So, Tyler, thanks for your support, and we'll get more shout-outs as we continue. As we go to break, hey, Golden Knight fans, if you want more VGK content and stay up to date with what's going on throughout the 25-26 season, head over to the Golden Knights YouTube channel right now and subscribe. You can watch all-access player videos, game highlights, and our newest behind-the-scenes content. Subscribe to our channel today and stay caught up on all things VGK and visit some of our greatest moments as the Vegas Golden Knights march through this season. We'll get into some of the other divisions and what's ahead for the Vegas Golden Knights and check in on the HSKs. We roll on Nighttime at Noon.
Live from City National Arena, this is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Darren Millard along with Brian McCormick. The show will be rebroadcast in the opening hour of the VGK Insider Show as well. So I want to tell everybody that we're listening. We're being in touch with you. We're looking forward to tonight's game against the Utah Mammoth, which will start with a pregame show on Fox Sports Las Vegas at 5 o'clock. Pregame show over on Scripps Sports goes at 5:30. To get into a little bit about what's going on with the Henderson Silver Knights, the contest back-to-back set on the weekend against Milwaukee. But let's start with a couple of guys who are up top right now. Carl Lindbom expected to go tonight in mm-hmm. goal for Vegas, looking for his first win. He's been just good enough to get some points. Deserved better in a couple of occasions, but knocking on that door for that first win.
Yeah, he's still looking for NHL win number one. He deserves it by now because he's played well enough to win in a couple of those outings. And, you know, I hope he gets it tonight, obviously. But I think it's a good experience for him as well. He's playing great in the NHL, but he's also, it's his second year in North America. We keep forgetting how young some of these guys are, how much more development there still is. I can tell you that Carl Lindbom never went a stretch like this where he played really well and didn't get rewarded for it with 2 points last year in Henderson. So, he didn't have a breezy year either. The Silver Knights had a rough season last year, but he was one of the big, big bright spots and was phenomenal in the second half of the year. So, you know, it's important every now and then to have a little bit of a mental test right now of, okay, keep doing my job, keep sticking to the fundamentals and the things I do well, and eventually I'm going to get rewarded for it. So for him to face a little adversity these last couple of weeks, again, for his sake and for the Golden Knights' sake, he won 2 points. But he's handled it very, very well, very maturely, and I don't think that it's not useful development-wise for him to push his way through that.
Yeah, for a first-time call-up, he's played well.
Yeah.
There hasn't been the lopsided game. And what he's going through is no different than guys of his journey have gone through before. Dustin Wolf had a couple of looks with Calgary before he became a full-time NHLer and struggled in some of those games coming up. It's adapting, and 22 is still very young for Carl Lindbom.
A couple of overtime losses, too, where, again, that's the rising tide lifts all boats. If the Golden Knights can figure out a way to get some finish in OT, and we might be talking, it's a different conversation of his record there, too. The important thing for him is to make the timely saves, of course, and, you know, I can't think of more than maybe one or two goals that he'd, you know, quote unquote, want to have back during this stretch. So, you know, keeping his nose to the grind and keep playing well. And again, they're facing a Utah team right now, one win in their last five. But it's a team that finds itself in that, I don't know, the last couple of years, you'd say maybe the Ottawa category, the Montreal category of, hey, we've got our players now. We've had a couple of years of stocking the system. Like, Utah's ready to win now. So it's a good team. It's a scrappy team. But it's a team that's gone through a little bit of a dip. They just beat the Rangers, but they were 0-3-1 before that in their prior games. But Nick Schmaltz, Clayton Keller, Logan Cooley, all good players that haven't scored a whole lot of late. So this also might be a good time for the Golden Knights to come back in, a game that you anticipate might have a little bit of sizzle to it. Mm-hmm. And for Carl Lindbom to close the door on some players that are maybe pressing a little bit right now.
For the Golden Knights and Carl Lindbom, they'll take on the Utah Mammoth for the second time in 5 days. Braden Bowman was very good in that first game on Thursday night, and he's found himself a home pending the return of Mark Stone, or it gives them options when Mark Stone comes back. But he's been on that top line with Jack Eichel and Ivan Barbashev, and the game on Thursday was the turning point for me for seeing some legit chemistry between Jack and Bowman.
Yeah, well, all the goal scoring that we've seen from Bowman is getting headlines, but it was against, I think it was in Utah, the Jack Eichel breakaway.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a stretch pass from Braden Bowman that was beautiful. It was a bank pass. The wall that crossed three lines. So he's getting comfortable, and I think from someone who's watched Bowman a lot, of course he's always good around the net, but he's been doing more of that with the VGK than, frankly, I can remember with the Silver Knights. The Silver Knights, he's been able to produce not just around the net, but off the rush, off the wall. And that's something I think Bruce spoke to last week as well. He doesn't sacrifice board play. He battles on the wall. He wins puck battles and prolongs possession. So what you and I talked about before Braden was called up in the first place was, you know, whatever he does, I don't think any of us saw this coming, but whatever he does, like, he's not a finished product.
No.
He's still
another 22-year-old.
He's still growing. He's still going to get better. But what he does so well and what we kind of anticipated was going to benefit him, he's fundamentally sound. He doesn't produce with flash. He's where he's supposed to be. And I ask Ryan Craig this sometimes, and we've talked about it with Braden Bowman. Like, the puck seems to follow him around. And it's like, well, the puck's going to follow you around if you're where you're supposed to be. And Bowman is always where he's supposed to be. He's not pressing. He doesn't try to overextend himself. His job is to be net front. He's net front. And there aren't too many rebounds that hop over his stick and get by him. He's quick hands. He's got good alertness. But he's been fundamentally where he's supposed to be. And that, I think, for a player like Jack Eichel, like Ivan Barbashev, it makes him really easy to play with.
I find him a very difficult player to describe. Because there's so much there. And the answer you always get is, what's your favorite thing about Braden Bowman? Everything.
Yeah.
He does all the little things.
I think it's simple. But that's what it is. It's simplicity.
But we like to go beyond that. Mm-hmm. there's only so many times you can go. He does all the little things before you need a little bit more for the audience. But he does some of the elite things really well. And positionally, he's just got a sense for the game.
And we're still learning what he does well that is going to translate to the NHL level. There are some players, just looking back at the American Hockey League, the last handful of MVPs here, Andrew Podorolski, TJ Tynan, guys who have been really, really good AHLers for a long time, and it's never quite translated to the NHL, which just means that gap, talent-wise, there are some things you do in the AHL you won't get away with in the NHL. Okay, can you figure out how to do something else? Mm-hmm. We'll find out where Braden Bowman's gaps are there, if there are any. But he knows up there, okay, keep it simple, be in position, be an easy target net front guy, crazy productive. He scores a lot in the AHL from above the circles. He's got a tremendous release. We really haven't seen it yet because that part of the game hasn't been required from him. But that's where I say he's not a finished product. As he gets more comfortable and as he knows, hey, I'm new to the NHL. I'm going to be easy to play with. I'm going to be where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to be an easy line mate to work with, and that's yielding production. We haven't seen him yet say, like, okay, let's start to walk around a little bit. Let's start to press. Let's try to create. Let's try to beat guys one-on-one. And when that part of the game comes to, we'll see what other level there is for him to go to.
It's been a wild ride. I think it was 2 weeks ago today that he got the news he was going up. All of this has happened in a very short time period. We'll get into tonight's game specifically against the Utah Mammoth, what it means to the Vegas Golden Knights, and check in around the National Hockey League and with you, where you're watching from, some of your questions and your comments, and maybe an appearance by a member of our studio audience. We've asked them to keep it. It's not the biggest room, so we try to keep the murmuring quiet. Yeah. You may not know how many people are actually here, but it's significant. Looking forward to interaction as we continue.
It's a small studio audience. You and I couldn't handle the heckling.
No. Nighttime at Noon continues on Fox Sports Las Vegas and the VGK social media channels.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
I feel good.
Thanks to Luis for getting us through the show. I'm back at the home of Fox Sports Las Vegas and Lotus Broadcasting. VGK Insider Show being filled in by Nighttime at Noon with Darren Millard and Brian McCormick. We should do this more often, though. I think the people, from what I'm gathering, appreciate this combination.
This banter?
Yes.
I think so, too. I'll talk to you anytime you want. I've told you that.
I just think we have to get the bosses on board instead of working against you and I being together a little more.
True.
Sizzle.
Well, the 4 hours we spend in this room talking to each other with the cameras off is probably being, it's time wasted, frankly. We could be much more productive than that.
The Henderson Silver Knights, give me the lowdown on what's happening. Good weekend split against Milwaukee.
Yep, split against Milwaukee and a split the weekend before that against Calgary. So 2-2 on the homestand and productive. The Silver Knights were in a little bit of a funk. They lost four in a row prior to the homestand, and then again they split the last four. So a little bit of a stopper. Defensively, they've been very strong. They've averaged like 23 shots against per game. Again, similar to what the VGK are going through right now. VGK, of course, finding more points. But defensively, structure's been good. It's just been trying to find a little bit more game management throughout this stretch. But right now, fourth in the Pacific Division, playing good hockey and getting ready for two this weekend in California, Ontario and Bakersfield.
You've been able to see first-round pick Trevor Connolly play four games now, and yep. He scored in both weekends.
Points in all four. He scored a power play goal on Saturday. Different skill set than we've seen with Henderson than in the past. He's electric. He can take guys on one-on-one, and he's making it look easy. I think the most encouraging thing is, again, not only has he been terrific, he's got 5 points in four games, and he's a player that makes you have to respect him when he's on the ice. He pushes guys back in the O-zone. But, you know, conceivably, these should be his preseason games, right? We should be looking and seeing some cobwebs to knock off. And after his first game, I said, well, how'd you feel? It's like, I felt way better on Sunday than I felt on Saturday. It's like, well, you had an assist and four shots on Saturday. You didn't look that bad that night. So it's come along real quickly, but young guy, a lot of fun, and not being able to play the first month and change, he was chomping at the bit. He was ready to get back to doing what he does, and you can see that in his game.
What's up next? You guys are on the road for a bit?
Yep, on the road for Ontario and Bakersfield this weekend. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, looking into December, just to get ahead of it, December 16th is Lucky Launch when fans can come throw stuffed animals onto the ice. So you know, it's a couple of weeks down the road, but people making their plans, December 16th is a day you want to be at Lee's Family Forum.
That's the night that, that you hope you fill it for eight and you score early.
Yeah, that's as soon as they – if you can score in the first period, we just wipe our brow and say, all right, good. That's because there's always contingency plans. What if no one scores? Like, don't bring that up. But this is a Silver Knights team that's second in the American Hockey League in scoring. So,
from a league perspective, some of the explosive results that we've seen so far this year, Detroit Red Wings making a run to get back into the playoffs. You've got the Colorado Avalanche who have separated themselves from the field across the National Hockey League.
The Avalanche... I'll look at it, make sure I don't get it wrong because it's that impressive. They're plus 38. Mm. Plus 38 goal differential. They're the best offensive team.
16-1-5.
The best defensive team. Just outrageous what the Avalanche have done. But I'll tell you, look around the rest of the league, and there's a lot more. I don't know that there's teams that have come down. Avalanche are running away. Dallas is up there too. But everywhere else, you know, Detroit, they're 13-8-1. They're at the top of the Atlantic. Tampa Bay had a really rough start to the season. They're looking a lot more Tampish over the last few weeks. But I think right now it's just that changing of the guard. Of last year, we saw Montreal take a significant step up. Detroit took too long to get there, but they looked like they were ready to take that step up.
Not many have dropped off.
Ottawa the same. You just have you've got Nashville, Calgary, and Vancouver have kind of dropped. The Rangers, the Leafs, surprisingly, they're in trouble. But you've got a lot of teams, Anaheim, San Jose, Chicago, that have taken that maturation step up where, okay, the rebuild's over, we've got the kids here now, and everyone's got a year under their belt. Let's take a productive step forward. A lot of teams have done that at the same time, and it's made it very crowded.
This next stretch for the Vegas Golden Knights, you've got Utah tonight. They haven't been as good as they were earlier this year. Then you have Ottawa, Montreal, and San Jose, followed by Chicago. There's some winnable games there.
Yeah.
But you make a great point in just describing a lot of those teams that they're not as there to be taken advantage of as in the past.
I think it takes some time every now and then for your brain to recalibrate from what you expect to happen to what's happening. And I've watched Anaheim a lot this season, you know, when the Golden Knights aren't playing, and put the baby to bed and sit down and they're on. And you go from like, oh, they're fun. No, they're good. Mm-hmm. Montreal last year, they're fun. No, they're good. And that's a little bit of a difference. Now, again, where the VGK are right now in their arc and their talent, they should expect to win every night. But this is a very appetizing portion of the schedule if we're looking at a year ago. Now, feisty teams are finding some confidence.
Checking in from Alaska, Paul, thank you. Greg is in Williston, North Dakota, and over in Texas, William checking in. And we have Country Night coming up next Tuesday, December 2nd, and we have a special member of our studio audience coming in. Here's Kevin. He's going to walk in and model his hat. Special ticket packages start at $95 each and include a limited edition VGK cowboy hat available exclusively through this offer. In addition, a portion of each ticket sold will be donated to the Vegas Golden Knights Foundation to support their efforts in the community around the 1 October initiative. So that's Country Night, where you get a special collector hat. If you buy the package through the VGK, this special ticket package, that's against Chicago on December 2nd. There's Kevin.
Kevin was going to hand us the hat, and we're wearing headsets. It would look ridiculous. So Kevin's the assistant. Assist. Mm-hmm. And see, look at that confidence, that bravado. You too can feel this way.
And if you're missing out on this.
Thank you, Kevin. Excellent.
Just imagine a model doing all the great shoulder turns, pulling on the jacket.
Not his first time.
No. Kevin has done that before. We weren't throwing him into an awkward position.
He's done it before, and now clearly he will do it again. Not the last time.
The people will ask for that.
Send him to the Arsenal.
For the Vegas Golden Knights against Utah tonight, both teams would love this win. You know as much as anybody to beat a team back-to-back in a short turnaround is difficult. One thing that Vegas has really been able to enjoy last couple of games has been Jack Eichel, who has been on a different level. The Thursday game against Utah was one of the best I've seen him play, and he was able to continue that on Saturday night in Anaheim.
5 points in the last two, getting pucks to the net, and again, just that bravado in the offensive zone. He'll be patient, hanging on to pucks. The Tomas Hertl goal the other day was Eichel holding the zone, and again, just waiting and again, some guys, you wait with the puck, and they'll charge at you.
There was a broken stick
Everyone
on the ice, too, that
back.
He was navigating around.
Yeah, yeah. So there's confidence there. He looks terrific. And as we mentioned, too, it's a Utah team that J.J. Paterka's on a nice little run right now. He's got 5 goals in the last six. Everyone else has been a little bit on the quieter side, so hopefully they're not ready to break out just yet. But I'll tell you what, the temperature rising the other day when these two teams met, we always say, well, everyone has a long memory when this comes back again. They haven't had to have a long memory. It's coming right back on. So does that physicality add into it? And what Bruce talked about, he was talking about the fourth line, but just in general, holding on the pucks in the offensive zone and wearing teams down, that's going to be important too. Board battles, and don't just make a prayer pass to the middle. Don't make a low percentage play. Hold on to pucks, value possession, make teams defend you. And that's something you can do that'll help wear down a young Utah team that has some good blue liners.
Interesting. I've heard it before from Bruce, but every time he says it, it's like, wow. When he talks about if a team wants to be physical with them, fine. Bring it. Because he likes that being dragged into the fight instead of just settling into a game.
Yeah, for sure. You said dragged into the fight is a good way to put it. There's plenty of purpose when you step on the ice for an NHL game, but if you can make it personal quickly, it's going to get everyone dialed into their assignments just as quick.
For the Vegas Golden Knights, it's an opportunity to extend a point streak that is growing as they go on, and for a road trip. This is game three of the three-game set, and for as much as you are disappointed in what happened Saturday night in overtime, you can go home with 5 of 6 points if you win tonight.
And then not easy points. Again, Utah has been a little less vital of late, but they're off to a nice start. They're a team, they're a playoff competitor team in the division. We've talked about what Anaheim is, so you take 5 of 6 from that stretch. That's a win as you come back home.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving? Holiday week?
I'm getting on a bus. I'm going to Ontario.
Yeah.
So we'll figure something out on Wednesday, I think. I'm not the chef, so I don't know, maybe...
Will you
baby's first Thanksgiving.
Early?
We'll do it Wednesday. We'll do something on Wednesday just to get the photos. But for Thanksgiving itself, I'll be asleep early, I think.
Will you go as aggressively with your production as you did for Halloween? With Merritt's first Halloween?
Oh, I've been told that there's a onesie picked out.
Oh, is there?
So, yeah. I'm not in the costume department, unfortunately, but I get to run the camera.
I'd love to see you guys dressed up as the Pilgrims.
Okay. Wait till the 4th of July. Your mind will be blown when we do that.
Oh, we're just getting around to that. You are a planner. I love it. Golden Knights take on the Utah Mammoth tonight. Tune in to the pregame show on Scripps Sports at 5:30. And if you're listening to Fox Sports Las Vegas, it starts at 5 o'clock with Ryan Wallace. The Golden Knights finishing off this road trip and back home on Wednesday. Thanks for listening to Nighttime at Noon. For Brian McCormick and our entire studio audience, enjoy the game, everybody.